Hello and welcome to the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. My name is Goff and my special guest today is a man who I've actually known for quite some time. We went to school together and then after school, he decided he wanted to do a PhD in disability education. So he's quite learned in the old disability field. It's Dr. Ben Whitburn. How are you today, Dr. Ben?
I'm very well, Goff, thank you, and a delightful intro.
Was I accurate?
Well, there's a small break in between, perhaps, but no, you've got me pegged.
All right, good. I'm glad I didn't muck that up because I was a bit concerned. I didn't want to underqualify you. So now look, the word discrimination is something that a lot of people throw around willy-nilly, so to speak. In your eyes, I want to make it clear you're not a lawyer, obviously, but in your eyes, how would you determine discrimination?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess for me, to put it in really simple terms, to discriminate is to generally, I guess, unjustifiably disparage somebody or prevent them from participating in an activity, whether or not that's a compulsory activity or not. And it tends to be, put upon people who have an identity that might be a little bit different from the mainstream. So by that, I guess I mean like a person with a disability. It might be that discrimination is given on the grounds of race or gender, cultural background, refugee status, etc. And I guess one of the things that you might say in response to that is that it is almost impossible to find someone who isn't touched by one of those markers of difference or diversity or identity in the first place. So discrimination in that way can be quite ubiquitous and kind of everywhere. But there is, of course, legislation that would encourage people to not discriminate, anti-discrimination legislation.
Well, and of course,
all of those types.
Well, it's obviously discrimination is wrong and shouldn't happen, obviously. But I want to obviously your expertise is the education field, so let's talk about that a little bit. So if I'm a parent and I have a kid who has a disability and I'm sending them off to school, what are some key sort of red flags or warning signs to make sure my child isn't being discriminated at school education level?
Well, for a start, I guess I would say that off the bat, according to the last census in Australia, there was roughly 18% of the population disclosed living with a disability of some kind or other. And that tends to be weighted, I guess, quite heavily towards older people who acquire an impairment as they get older. But there's also a lot of young people, children and young people who either are born with or acquire a disability. So for a start, if a parent were to take their child who may have an impairment to their local school, they should probably expect up to 17, 18% of the other students might have one. So if they don't, could that be a red flag? Not necessarily, because schools often are quite selective about the students that they take in.
Should now, they be?
Well, no. I think the argument that we make in the work that I teach teachers is that you should expect that many students in your class, and if you work in a neighbourhood, the people who attend, the families that attend your school should be from your neighbourhood. So it's kind of as simple as that. To go back to your question, what sort of red flags? Well, invariably, it does get a little bit grey and it's different in every state and territory of Australia, but...
I'm meaning more general. So, for example, if the kid comes home and says, "Mum, I wanted to do a music class, but the teacher said I can't because I've got no legs," that's not cool.
I'd call that a problem. I definitely call that a problem. But I think I was kind of talking a little bit sooner than that in terms of one of the major discriminations that is exercised upon young people and their families with disabilities is being prevented from enrolling in the first place.
Oh, yeah, well, that's yes.
And this is called gatekeeping. And a lot of schools will say, oh, look, the school down the road might be better for you.
And they're not allowed to do that?
They're not allowed to do that. And again and again and again, they get away with doing it though. So, so, like I said before, that legislation may or may not be that helpful.
So once the kid is in the school, so we've established that the school should absolutely take your child. Once the child is within the school, what are some things that if the kid's coming home and telling you certain things where you should maybe put your hand up and go, you know what, that's not quite right. Let's go in and have a chat to somebody at the school. What are one or two things that parents should look out for?
You know, the first thing I'd say is that parents know their children and they know what's reasonable. So if a child is being prevented from participating in, for example, an exam, they need to question whether or not that's a problem. So again, it comes down to the personal, what sort of capacity a child can have. But I guess from the outset, one thing I tend to really try and emphasize when I'm teaching teachers is that to recognize that there's a lot of technological advancement these days. There's a lot of ways that there are support mechanisms for students with all sorts of disabilities, whether it's assistive technology that they need or teacher aid. These things can be put in place. And I guess the question is, can they be put in place in ways that support the young people to learn at the same rate as their peers? And if they're not getting that, then that's a red flag.
Are there any other red flags that parents need to sort of have their you know, antenna tuned to, that the child might come home and suggest something's happened? What about bullying, for example? Like if the child is being bullied because of their disability, obviously that's something that the parents should raise with the school?
Oh, absolutely. But I guess if we think of inclusive education as it depends where we come at this. I think it's important to remember that schooling is important both in the academic sense and the social sense. And if a student is not being included in the social context of the school, then there's clearly a problem there.
So that's another red flag if the kid comes home and
absolutely.
Says, you know, there was a school play, for example, but I wasn't allowed to try out for any of the parts. So that's something, again, where the mother or father said, well, hold on a second, that doesn't sound right to me.
If that child had expressed a desire to do acting and participate in that way, absolutely.
And what,
on the other hand, if they were being forced into it and they didn't want to participate in the local play, then that's another extreme of there being a problem.
What about in the schoolyard with the other kids? Now, I'm a firm believer, and I would trust you would be too, that it's actually really important for kids without disabilities to be mixing with kids with disabilities so that they have a well-rounded education and a well-rounded knowledge of the basic world. Because, I mean, as you rightly said, when they're adults, they're going to bump into folks with disabilities. So it's good that they do that at school. Now, can you take us through some of the advantages that non-disability kids are going to have by mixing with kids with disabilities?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before we get there, let's just work on the terminology. It's kind of common to talk about students with and without disabilities, non-disabled kids. I guess it could call them what you like, but ultimately, I think we could get away with just calling them kids. You know, the young people in a school need to be participating in every aspect of that education. And if they're not, then there's definitely a problem. Now, there have been countless studies that have shown that kids without disabilities can actually perform better when there are students with disabilities in their classrooms and in their schools, when they're more inclusive environments more generally. So, there's one advantage. I guess another advantage is to get a broader sense of the sorts of diversity that make up the people on our planet is probably an important aspect as well. But, you know, the pure nuts and bolts of if a school can show that it is inclusive, that's an important contribution that they're making to the development of their communities more broadly. So now, I'd suggest it's win-win.
No, I give the example to people that, let's say, for example, somebody that I went to school with, you know, they grow up and they own a business, and then somebody with a vision impairment comes in and asks them for a job. will all say to themselves, well, hold on a second, I went to school and there was a guy in my class and he was blind and he was able to participate in everything. He was a good guy. He did all the work and he was really nice to get along with. So I'm going to treat this person with dignity and respect like they deserve to be because I have prior knowledge of working with somebody back in my youth with a disability. And that would be a good thing. Is that a reasonable and good example of where a good thing can happen?
You've given a solid example there. I guess on the flip side, and I'm always complicating things perhaps a little bit too far, but you're not likely to run into every diversity in your growing up that you're ever going to meet because people, you know, there is countless diversity out there.
Yeah, so my point being
if we can start at the lower end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So my point important. Being, obviously, you know, they've dealt with somebody who is different to themselves in their early life.
Yeah, but, you know, I think that's all great, but nor do we really need to draw terribly much attention to that diversity in the first place. It's just one of many.
Fair enough. Now, I always like to give that example because I feel that it's something, because that was my next question, is going to be like if somebody isn't getting the education that they need, obviously employment, because I always just think of employment straight away, obviously their employment options are going to be diminished, for example, you know, if they're not given the education that they are rightly entitled to for whatever reason. You know, there are other examples you can give of where not receiving the education that they need is going to, you know, affect them later on in life.
Yeah, okay. There's a couple of things I'd say to that. And firstly, educational exclusion is not something that has always happened, hey? It has a history. And it has a history that started around the 1700s in Europe of people with disabilities and then not being able to work. These people would have to beg and et cetera. And it's important to say there that there is a history and it changes over time, yeah? So if we fast forward to the present day and it's been about 6 or so years, Australia has this fantastic new scheme called the National Disability Insurance Scheme, the NDIS, and you might hear these letters being used a lot these days. And what it essentially does in a nutshell is that it takes the funding off disability services and gives it, puts it in the pockets of the people with disabilities who need it. And their job then is to go out and spend it on the packages that they require to get the support they need. And that could be as something as simple as getting someone to help them do the gardening or the cleaning and cooking in their house, or it might be about getting a particular type of therapy or assistive technology or whatever it is that they might need. Now, as wonderful as this all sounds, in the present day, what we're starting to find is that a lot of people who are in receipt of this kind of support, or they need the sort of support and can't get it, is because they don't have the capacity to organise these sorts of quite complicated services themselves because they haven't got the education and they haven't learned. So it is a really important point of getting an education. The other thing I would suggest is that there have been a lot of, over the last 50-100 years or so, there's been a lot of day programs for people with disabilities. You know, even in vision impairment, the what is now called Vision Australia used to run workshops for people who would make brooms for a living because they couldn't get a typical job. Now, a lot of these things have closed down, but they closed down largely because people with disabilities finally got a voice to speak up and say, we don't really want to do this anymore. And I mean, it's quite sad that there are still a lot of these sorts of day programs going on, particularly for people with intellectual impairments. But
sounds a little bit sweatshop-like, doesn't it?
Very much. But there's a lot of research that there's a lot of focus these days on why don't we listen to the people themselves and see what they've got to say. And when, surprise, surprise, they turn around and say, actually, I'm not a big fan of this. I'd love to be doing anything else. That's when things can start being addressed. So, again, important to learn that you can speak up and to have a voice and to be able to advocate for yourself, or at least know how you can access the advocacy that you need.
Well, it's a really good point, because I mean, I'm a firm believer in that everybody is born with a talent or a skill. I mean, some people just instantly know, you could put a bunch of ingredients in front of them and they know that that flavor works with that flavor, and they can make a delicious meal, and they just somehow intuitively know that. Now, not me, I'm a terrible cook, but you know, everybody has their in particular skill. So with somebody, would you say to teachers, would that be a piece of advice that you might give them if they have a child in their class who has a disability of some kind, sort of see what their particular skill set is and sort of, you know, not necessarily cater to that, because obviously they need a well-rounded education, but do you understand what I'm trying to say? Like, make sure that they're nurtured and encouraged like they should be.
Absolutely. Yep. So again, what we spend a lot of time focusing on in the teaching of teachers is to concentrate on what we call strength-based planning, because their job is to always plan for all of their students and to draw on what is a strength in every individual. And what's really important to recognize there, if we're talking about the inclusion of education or the inclusiveness of it, is that people will come into your classroom with very different entry points. And what's important there is to learn what their entry point is and to cater to their strengths. Again, astounding to think here that one of the main ways you can do that is to ask them. And so there is a lot of focus on listening to students and what makes them tick and helping them develop from there.
Well, that's it, because I think that people might find that children do actually have a brain and know what they like and know what they don't like and know what they can do and know what they can't do. So the best person to ask might be the student themselves. Is that sort of a fair statement?
Yep, absolutely. And the people around them, their parents, their families, their carers, the people in their lives.
Absolutely. Now, one thing that I'm curious as to your opinion on is probably more high school related now, is do you think something like disability awareness should be taught to the students in school so that, as they grow up through life, they have more of an education and an understanding of... Because one thing I've found in my general life, and I'm sure you have as well, is just the general ignorance. And it's not done on purpose. It's just because they don't understand what blind or vision impaired even means, for example. So, like, they just have an ignorance that isn't intended. They don't mean to be rude or mean, but they are being rude and mean. But if they were taught certain things in high school, like, you know, about disability, would that be helpful for the general community at large, do you think?
It's a good question, Gough, and I think it's one worth investigating a little further. I, as part of my role, as I guess a professional hair splitter, I would say to be aware of something is a bit kind of binary. You're either aware of it or you're not. I think I might prefer to suggest disability confidence. And I'll take you through an example. I mean, you might be familiar with the sorts of disability awareness training that goes on where we'll slap a blindfold on someone and give them a stick and tell them to get on with walking a circle. In many ways, that's great, but you're not learning about the social implications of the challenges that a blind person faces when you learn in these ways, because really a disability is potentially more socially a problem than it is a physical or biological one. So to that end, I suggest, why don't we talk about disability confidence, where we can work with organisations, we can work with the personnel in them to really break apart some of those social implications of what they do and the barriers that what they do may inadvertently cause a problem to them.
But is that not something that you can teach at high school to students? Is that not something that could be taught? Because it sounds to me like it could be.
Oh, I would think so. But then again, where would you put it? You know, I mean, you put it in the science curriculum. it might be a challenge. I would tend to think, though, there's becoming confident with all sorts of diversities through the curriculum across the board that is really important. And It can be done. Of course it can. But you'd have to be running, I guess, quite a whole school approach to that. That is quite systematic.
Well, don't they used to have like religious education classes, which each student had to attend. So would that not be the same? You could just get all the students and, you know, for, you know, every Wednesday for 3 weeks, they do a workshop or something of that nature. Would that not, I mean, I'm just a very simple guy, but is that not a solution?
Probably. I would tend to think let's embed it into the everyday curriculum more so and teach it as if it's just part of everyday life, not a bolt-on.
Fair enough. Good call. All right. Well, that about brings us to the end. Well, actually, before we do end, two quick questions. Is there anything else disability-related that we haven't covered that you think we should? Obviously, it's a huge subject, so it's very general. But I mean,
it's a huge subject.
Is there a main overriding message that you would like to say?
Okay. Well, look, I guess I would say that the implications or the barriers that can really jump in front of people with disabilities are kind of everywhere. They go from not being able to find or even access a toilet, not being able to find or access a tram or a bus. Those things can change day to day depending on where people are. I guess what I would suggest is to for people to be really aware of those potentialities and to recognize that if they see somebody in distress because they're going back and forth and they can't find something, ask them if you can help them. You know, again, not rocket science. Asking people tends to be a pretty simple way forward that is quite effective.
And that would yes, well, that's just general good manners. But anyway, and if people want to learn more about Dr. Ben Whitburn, where can they go to read some of? Because obviously, like I said, you've written a whole heap of studies and whatnot. Where can people go if they want to learn more about your work and what you do? Where can they find you?
Yeah, so look, I still haven't been kicked off most of the social medias, so I'm fairly easy to find on. So Twitter, I'm at Ben Whitburn, just my name. Google Scholar, if you put my name in Google Scholar, you come up with a lot of published work, and some of it is talking about disability and the potentialities of you know, positive, optimistic work we can do with disability that is open access, so everyone can read it without being an academic. So by all means, but I'm never far from a Google search, I'm sure, for sure. And, a few presentations that I've done lately have managed to find their way onto the web, for better or worse, and you can see more of the sort of stuff that I've talked about here today there.
Well, we can actually watch you in action and say, what a strikingly handsome fellow, as well as being knowledgeable.
Precisely.
All right, well, thank you so much for your time today. Ben, I really do appreciate it.
Not at all, Gough. Thanks so much and appreciate the invitation.
No worries at all, my friend. And, of course, that brings us to the end of this week's episode of the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe in whatever podcast app you may be listening to this in. Leave a friendly comment because that's, as Dr. Ben would say, you know, being nice and friendly to your fellow man is a good thing. Is that not correct there, Mr. Whitburn?
Certainly a good start, but I would encourage all sorts of commentary, positive, negative, or otherwise, so we can have a chat about it.
All right. Well, I would have just preferred positive, but never mind. We can you can call me a dickhead if you so prefer. That is it's a free country, freedom of speech. Now, and of course, beernutsproductions.com is your one-stop shop for all your entertainment needs. So make sure you hit up beernutsproductions.com. Until next time, we will talk to you then.